And then Ronaldo! Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near post! Messi to the net!
Mamma mia! Lionel!
Romelu Chiocco now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elis! Elba Feliz! La Pantanita! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. From the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. As we roll on, quick word for Advantage BMW Midtown. If you're looking for a BMW, you want that German engineering, get down to Advantage BMW in Midtown. It is the place to go. Go down there, say hello to Justin. It is the place to be. We've done a number of shows down there, and we're really thankful for their support for getting soccer on the airwaves here in Houston, Texas. So a big thank you to Advantage BMW Midtown. And a great segue into a guy that's doing a tremendous job on NBC as a commentator. You see him week in and week out, but more so played over 450 games in all competitions for Middlesbrough in England. He is Robbie Musto. He joins us now. Robbie, thank you so much for your time.
Lovely to be here, Glenn. Nice to speak to you again.
Yeah, good to speak to you, too. It's been a long time since we did that game in Jerry's Palace with Barcelona and Club America. So
absolutely, a long time ago.
It was. It's amazing how time flies. Let's just talk about first, I just want to mention that you guys are going to be in Austin for an NBC Premier League event. You've done these in D.C. You've done them in New York. This will be at Schultz Garden the 26th and 27th. These things look like they've been a lot of fun, and it's amazing the turnout you get.
I mean, I think it's the in some ways the best stuff that we've done to mingle and to mix with the supporters and to get a sense of how the Premier League is growing in the US and how passionate the fans are here, to get involved, to be part of it, to walk and talk through fans, to hear the fans singing songs against the other team, the other side of the hall or the pub or wherever we're at. It's just been the best, absolutely the best. It's a little bit more relaxed from our point of view. We can have a little bit more fun. I was dared to dance off in a blimmin' mascot uniform at Carmarthen. You know, last time supporting Rebecca Lowe, I'm sure they've got plenty for us to do silly things in cowboy boots and hats. And I think there might be one of those what do you call them, Glenn? The little rodeo thing, the horse thing, or the bull.
Yeah.
Fucking bull.
Yeah, riding the bull, maybe, in Austin. You better be ready because Austin's motto is, you know, about keeping it weird. So you're going to get some good stuff in Austin.
Yeah, I think so. So I'm super looking forward to it. It's nice to get away from the East Coast a little bit and to go into different cities. I know there's another two, I think, FanFest planned for the rest of this season. But I really do think it's helped us grow. I think it's made us more accessible to people. And people are so excited to see us. It's kind of a little bit crazy that when we turn up in these places, you know, the fans' faces have been excited to see Rebecca, Carl, and me and Robbie Earl. So I absolutely love them. And I think it's been a really good addition to our coverage of this amazing league.
Yeah, it's almost like taking a band on tour in some ways. And Austin's going to be a great place for it. Again, at Schultz Garden, October 26th and 27th, NBC will be there with their Premier League Fan Fest. I want to take you to Middlesbrough when you were a player. You had Brian Robson as a manager.
Oh.
Talk to me about him and what kind of manager he was, because I always loved him as a player.
Well, I hope that the listeners have got a strong sense of who Brian Robson was. I mean, Captain Marvel for Manchester United and for England. And I'm not just saying this. He was my idol as a young pro coming into the game, Brian Robson, United, because he could do everything in midfield, tackle, aggressive. He was a leader, he could score goals. He could maneuver the ball, he could pass it. And so when he came to our club as our manager and my coach, it was a bit of a wow moment for me. And almost like the first week, Glenn, he pulled me in his office and he said, I've seen you play in midfield. It's my position in the team. I want you a part of this team going forward. I like what you do. I mean, for me to hear that from him was just so huge for me. It's actually myself and a young player called Jamie Pollock that really kind of was his midfield going into the Premier League and signing all the international superstar players that we bought at that time. So no doubt the favourite part of my career as a player at Middlesbrough under Brian Robson. And remember, he was a player coach for the first season, Glenn, so I got to see him play. And it's difficult to explain these top players. I was at Middlesbrough with some top international players, you know, not just Premier League players, but top international players. Brian Robson, Paul Gascoigne, Paul Ince, Paul Merson, Gareth Southgate, and the current England manager, Juninho, the Brazilian, probably the best ever player for Middlesbrough Football Club. So it was, and seeing Robson train was an education, an absolute education, and I learned more from being around him than anything else in my career. So Brian Robson, when you say his name, absolute legend, was great for my career, and hopefully I did a good job for his team as well.
You know, your career is pretty remarkable because we don't see this much anymore. 12 years with one club, 450 appearances in all competitions. Does the modern game sometimes, because, you know, you were still part of kind of the, maybe the bridging of the gap. Does some of the things in the modern game now kind of brush you the wrong way, maybe?
Yeah, you're talking about the top end, Glenn. And it does wind me up a little bit. Of course, when these superstar players will sometimes refuse to train, refuse to play on the hope of a move to another club. You know, I wasn't that great a player to be in demand from a Liverpool or a Man United or a Real Madrid or the biggest clubs. I wasn't that at that level. So I got my head down and I worked hard and I did the best that I can. I was good for Middlesbrough Football Club. They were good for me. So it wasn't really an option for me. I think when you see the modern game now on the top level, it is frustrating. That being said, there are still plenty of players out there, Glenn, that do stay at clubs for a long period of time. Not many, but there are a few. I know we worked with Lee Dixon, of course, from the UK, played for Arsenal, I think, for 15 years and won titles. So it does happen. Maybe less so now than it was, and maybe that trend will continue, sadly. But I do look at people like James Milner, and I know there are different clubs and moving around, but what a good pro. There's still great pros at some of these clubs that will stay there, that won't want to move on. The interesting one, Glenn, right now is Harry Kane. Harry Kane, Spurs through and through. What's he going to do? Is he going to stay at a club for another 4, 5, 6, 7 years and stay there through his best years, or is he going to want to think that he can win titles with another club? It's a fascinating situation in terms of getting into his mind. What does he want to do? And if Spurs continue to struggle a little bit and capitulate in terms of their performance, I would think that he might say, you know what, I owe it to myself and my career and my potential and my lifetime opportunity right now in this career to go as far as I can go and might seek a move away from Spurs. I hope that, because I think they're a brilliant match for each other when things are going well. But that's a really good question you asked me of my longevity in the modern game. Harry Kane is everything. He's a top world-class striker. Does he stay at a football club that he loves, or does he move on? And I think it will sadly depend on the performance of the team and how they go over the next few months this season, because there's no question, you know, that he will be in demand for some of the biggest clubs that will try and pull him away from Spurs.
Boy, it's interesting to think about him plugged into different teams around the world.
Yeah.
With his qualities.
Yeah, and it is. And there was some Sky Sports coverage. So, of course, NBC Universal now, Comcast owns Sky as well. So we're very much a team with the Sky pundits as well. And after the United-Liverpool game, Roy Keane was in the studio and he had a line saying about United. They were arguing about the strikers of Man United. And he said, just go and get Harry Kane. Because that's what Man United used to do, Glenn, wasn't it? They used to pick the best players from the other Premier League sides. You know, wherever you look, Andy Cole, Rio Ferdinand, Roy Keane, all of them, they were the best players at other clubs. Harry Kane is the best player at Spurs. And Keane's saying, just go and get him. So there you go. I mean, why wouldn't United try and get Harry Kane from a club that's in a bit of a turmoil situation at the moment? So that's modern-day football. He's such a good pro. You can understand it if he says at the end of the season, you know what, I'd love this club and it's been great for me, but I'd love to go and seek a new challenge. Often difficult. It's difficult to try and explain to fans that you want to move on. Paul Pogba's tried to do it. Not the same. Not good. Don't like that. Stay at United. Paid a lot of money for you. Put a lot of trust in you. Stay, get your head down and be an effective player for the team. Christian Eriksen at school's been there a long time. Reaching the end of his contract. So every case is different. It's just, you know, loyalty in football, there isn't really any loyalty in football. I just like the Kane scenario more than the Pogba scenario of a player that thinks maybe their time is now to move on to a different situation.
Yeah, and he's got some of those great throwback qualities. I mean, when I look at him, I see, you know what, football's priority for me. I see it number one. I don't see that with every player as talented as so many of them are. I want to take you into Manchester United because it's a double-edged sword that you just brought up, because isn't it difficult for them now? Because, yes, in the old days they could go pick off Harry Kane, but they can't now because no Champions League football. And the other problem for them is, don't people overprice their players to them, knowing, you know, the amount of money that is behind that team? Don't they kind of price potentially their players a little bit higher to them just based on the fact that they are just such a wealthy club in so many ways?
Yeah, that's I think, though, to be fair, that's always been the case. That's always been the case with United, with some of the bigger clubs in European football in the world. That's what they have to live with. More of a concern is value they're getting for their money. Value they're getting. I talked about it on our show a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, or maybe 3 weeks ago. United have spent $1 billion, Glenn, $1 billion since Sir Alex Ferguson left to try and, you know, grow the team. And we're at a situation where the current manager, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, wants to strip it right back down and totally rebuild. So the $1 billion is, in effect, most of that's been wasted. Now, the same structure exists at United. Edward Wood is the main man there, making or making final player decisions. I worry that United, with a different philosophy of bringing in younger, hungry players, okay, but make sure they're good enough. And to be fair, the Harry Maguires, the Wan-Bissakas and Dan James have done a really good job, so a good start in terms of the new philosophy going forward. But you've got to buy some players, Glenn. You've got to have some spectacular success signings to get to the level of Liverpool and of Manchester City. Think about Kevin De Bruyne signing. Think about Mo Salah, Sadio Mane, you know, Firmino, Van Dijk, players that have been brought into these, particularly Liverpool, that have been spectacularly successful. Now, they're kind of rare. It's kind of rare to get so many successful big hit signings. City have done it. Liverpool have done it. They've both got great managers. That's why you're seeing a crazy difference between those two and everybody else, because they've married great managers with great recruitment. And my concern with Man United, Glenn, is that we've seen poor recruitment and managers that haven't been the right fit for whatever reason. And what's changed? Nothing's changed. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer might be the man. I hope he is the man for Man United. I'm not convinced. And the recruitment side, no director of football, means to me that why should we all of a sudden think they're going to come in, other than the $1 billion of players that have come in, are going to be successful. So much has got to go right. You're right. The prices the clubs will want for their players will be extremely high. But my goodness, the recruitment side of that football club has got to get it right, has got to get it right for this rebuild and for this new manager to have a chance to get anywhere near the likes of Liverpool and Manchester City. It's so difficult to get recruitment and the coach right to be successful. And that's my concern with United going forward.
We're talking to Robbie Musto, NBC Sports, played for Middlesbrough in the Premier League, and of course, FanFest coming to Schultz Garden October 26th and 27th. Back to Manchester United, it seems like it's sliding into being a mid-table team. I get the history. I get the Busby Babes. I get all the way through and through. Sir Alex, Cantona, on and on we can go. I mean, we could talk forever about these legendary teams and players.
Yeah.
But it almost seems like it's less a destination to go to now.
Well, it is less a destination, but it's still Manchester United. And sometimes, to be honest with you, Glenn, I sometimes get a little bit fed up of hearing, oh, it's Man United, it's, you know, this. It is a huge club. So even though the Champions League football isn't there right now, and even so, I think they're sat in 13th place in the Premier League, it still is a giant club, and it's still a club that, well, maybe the top boys might not want to go to right now, but a lot of good players would want to go to. And I think that's what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is talking at the moment, that he wants players that want to come to United that maybe aren't the top boys. They've tried all that, Glenn, haven't they? With Alexis Sanchez. And I guess Paul Pogba, we'll wait and see, but it hasn't been great so far. They've gone for the Angel Di Maria was another one. But for some reason, the top players, you know, demanding the most money hasn't worked there. So that's the challenge, them to find the right type of player to come into the football club and be successful. That's the thing. There's so many players that move around the Premier League sides and haven't been good enough. United haven't any more of those. They've got to get the right players in at the right price to improve the team, and that's not easy. But it's still United, and players will want to go there. It's difficult. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's picks could be different to the next manager. That's why the director of football at the club, for me, is crucial. The director of football will dictate the type of player, the actual player, that they fit the philosophy of the football club, and not the manager. Because David Moyes signings are different to Van Gaal's signings, which is different to Mourinho's signings, and now Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's signings. If he brings in players and he gets fired in a year or so, the next guy comes in, well, I don't like his players. That's the problem. That's the rut, the groove they've been in before, and they want to get away from that. But for me, you've got to have a director of football and a real solid structure that the signings will fit whoever they bring in. Because whoever they bring in is going to fit the players that they're signing.
Robbie, listen, thank you so much for your time. You're a gem for coming on. You're going to be up in Austin, NBC Premier League Fan Fest. It's at Schultz Garden, October 26th and 27th. I happen to be in Austin that weekend, so I may come over and say hi to you and take in some of the games and catch up with you a little bit. But again, thank you so much for coming on tonight. Great insight in a lot of different areas. We probably could have went on for hours, but
I'm sure.
I better get you back to NBC where you get your where you got to deliver for them. So thank you so much again for coming on.
My pleasure, Glenn. Enjoyed it, mate. Take care.
All right. He's Robbie Musto. That's a man who played 450 times for one singular club over 12 years in all competitions. That's pretty amazing to think of. That's not going to happen too much anymore. It will in some cases, but not much with the amount of agent involvement and players in free agency and wanting to move to different places and for different teams. All right, we're going to take a break here. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5 is going to roll on here as we go to break here. A quick reminder, a great place to watch Premier League games is right down at King's Court, down on Hutchins, right near the stadium. You got all kinds of supporters groups in there. The Houston Red Army for Manchester United, started by the author Tom Clare. That's down there. You got the Bayou City Blues in there as well. So a lot of great Premier League watching this weekend. Catch it down at King's Court. Go in and say hello to Jay and Megan and enjoy yourself in there because there's a number of great supporters groups. All right, we'll take a break. We've got more to come.
You can now listen to all your favorite shows on the Amazon Echo.
Oh, sweet, dude.
Just say, Alexa, open ESPN 97.5.
Now playing ESPN 97.5.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Gordon stepping through to win it for Chicago. Kerr's off and running, calling for it from Nagasato. She's going to get it. Sam Kerr back in behind the defense. And she scores to put Chicago on top.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Everybody knows big showcase coming up this Sunday in the NWSL final. That'll be played down at Wake Med Soccer Park in Cary, North Carolina. You couldn't get a better matchup between the North Carolina Courage, who will be at home against the Chicago Red Stars. And we're very excited for this. This interview here with Rory Dames, the head coach of the Chicago Red Stars, is brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. They are our presenting sponsors. DaspitLaw.com. Rory, first off, number one, thank you for doing this interview on short notice here. But also, first, a big congratulations getting to the final. I know you get over the hump now, getting past the semifinals. What does this mean, number one, to you personally, and then the franchise?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, and thanks for all you do to cover the league and give it exposure. It was definitely a good day in Chicago yesterday. We've been close a few years, but for whatever reason, haven't been able to get over the hump. So I think to finally get that semifinal monkey off of our back was big. And to be able to get the Portland Thorns monkey off of our back in the same game was even bigger. But we have a special group of players that have been down the road before and have been pretty focused since the start of last season and have set some goals and are pretty close to finishing, checking them off the list.
Now, look, I know this is a difficult season for everybody in the NWSL, and I've spoken to you before television games with ESPN and, you know, players in and out this year. Some players and coaches have called this a season of three seasons in the NWSL. How hard has it been to get players sort of refocused coming back from World Cups and things like that? Because I think that's sometimes lost on the normal fan.
Yeah, the World Cup year is always rough. You know, you're trying to manage your players, keep them healthy and keep them in form before they go. And they're obviously playing in the league and contributing to the team. But it's hard to not expect them to have their mind elsewhere a little bit. And then there's obviously the time during the World Cup where some of your more influential players are gone, but you're relying on the group that you have and have been working really hard for you to that point. And then obviously you have after the World Cup. I'm very fortunate as a coach that our players that were at the World Cup are incredibly vested here in Chicago, incredibly vested to the club and the community. And, you know, Sam came back 3 days after Australia was knocked out and scored a hat trick for us to go down and beat Orlando. And we tried to give our U.S. players a week off last week. And outside of Julie, who we basically told her she needed to go away, you know, the other ones all took 2 days and we're back in training. So just very fortunate to have a very committed group of players of that level. And it's helped make our team what we are.
Yeah, you got a lot of wonderful players. And I know a lot of people want to ask about Sam Kerr and her ability as a striker. What has it been like to coach her? Because she is an exceptional talent, her movement. She's got some qualities that are without a doubt different. What's it been like to be in and around her, coaching her and working with her?
Sammy's made some big improvements this year, not just from a tactical and technical standpoint, but from a mentality standpoint. You know, I don't think anybody can understand the pressure she felt going into the World Cup and basically having the hopes of the nations riding on her shoulder. And the way she handled that and the way she took care of herself leading up to it and her preparation was impeccable. So it was a little disappointing to see them go out when they did. But the other part of Sam would be, besides being an incredible soccer player, she's just a great person. And her energy is high all the time. And it's fun and it's focused when it needs to be and it's lighthearted when it needs to be. But most importantly, it's contagious. You know, and when the person that leads your line up front and the person you look to win games for you kind of has that demeanor and carries herself like that, it spreads through the group. You know, and I think we were very, very fortunate to have Kristen for the years before Sam, and we're blessed to have an incredible striker then. And we've been blessed these last 2 years to have Sam and just the energy and the vibe she brings, you know, and she's a competitor and she wants to win and she drives the group from the front.
Rory Dames joining us. Chicago Red Stars coach has taken them to the final. They ended up second during the regular season. So we've got the number one North Carolina Courage taking on the Chicago Red Stars. This will be Sunday at Wake Med Soccer Park. You can catch this on ESPN. A very big moment for the league this past weekend. The two matches were wonderful showcases for the NWSL and what it can be and what it can be even bigger in the future. Julie Ertz, I want to take you to her because I know you wish you had two of her. Because you've played her in midfield, you've played her at the back. Just talk about her attitude, her commitment to the game, and her passion for the game, because I think that really just flows through when people watch her play.
Yeah, well, I mean, Julie's the backbone of the team. You know, we drafted Julie out of Santa Clara. She was just Julie Johnson then. She wasn't Julie Ertz, the rock star then. So watching her growth as a soccer player and as a person has been a special thing for myself. And, you know, the best thing I can say about Julie is Julie's just a winner. You know, she wants to win. And there's no moment that's too big for her. So she's constantly organizing on the field, constantly looking for problems before they occur to solve them. And if you look at Julie's path to where she is from, you know, the last two World Cups ago to originally getting cut from that team and then working herself back into it and making a FIFA 11 as a center back. And then post-Olympics, where she kind of got herself put onto the bench and then stayed true to it and worked hard and reinvented herself as a six and then made the FIFA All-11 team as a six. It's just a testament to Julie and her fortitude and her perseverance. But if you spend a week with her and her mentality and her mindset, it becomes very clear why she's like that and why she's had the success that she's had. So I haven't been around a better leader than her. When you take all of the components of what leadership is about, you know, there's a reason she won a U-20 World Cup as a captain. There's a reason she's led the U.S. to 2 World Cups. And hopefully she can lead us to the promised land this weekend.
Talking to Rory Dames here. All right, let's get into this game this weekend, because this is very interesting tactically, because North Carolina Courage, obviously this tremendous team speed, this mobility, it's a high-pressing game. They keep the energy high. It's what they did against Reign FC. Vlatko Andonovski came out with a good plan in that game, kept his team in the game. They had good goalkeeping. How do you approach this team with so many weapons? And I'm not... I don't want you to feel as though I'm slighting the Chicago Red Stars, because you got weapons of your own and you got international players, but this is a pretty scary beast in the Courage.
Yeah, no slight taken. I mean, North Carolina, what Paul's built there, going back to Paul, Charlie, and Aaron when it was Western New York, and then what Paul has carried on over to Carolina, it's outstanding. They've built something that we haven't seen before in the club game. And, you know, just the game they played against Leon this year that goes down 1-0, they showed their quality. So they are a special group for whatever reason. We have matched up well with them over the years and the regular season. They've obviously ended our season the last 2 years. We had to go there 2 years ago and play them in the playoffs down there. So we have some experience going down there. But it'll be nice for Paul not to be able to use the underdog card on the weekend. I mean, we're for sure the underdog in this event, and we understand that, but we're looking forward to the opportunity. And it'll be a huge challenge to beat North Carolina in North Carolina, especially in the final. But we're really relishing the opportunity to get down there and give it a go.
Rory, do you have to stand up to them in midfield? And then that would bring the obvious question, and I know you don't want to reveal too much because we're a number of days away. You are still preparing for this game, but I do want to kind of get a little bit of tactical here for the audience. Is there a possibility you play a Julie Ertz in midfield to combat that box? What does it look like to you from the outside at this point?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've played them 3 times this year. We beat them twice at home, and we tied them at their place, and we've played them differently all 3 times. And I think one of the biggest things with Carolina is if they have the ability to prepare for exactly what you're going to do, you're probably going to be in for a long day. So to have some variation in how you go up against them, I think, is important. We actually haven't played Julie in the back line against them yet this year. So it's not beyond reason to think that Julie could move into the midfield and Katie Naughton could plug back into a center back, or Sarah could slide back inside. But when we played him there last time, we played him in a 3-6-1. So we matched their box. We got some width against them and then kept Sam up high. Sat a little lower against them in one game, got up high and pressed them in a different game. So I think there's a few different ways about going against them. But I think the 3 main keys with Carolina is you can't let the front runners get in behind you. You can't let their outside backs wrap up high and just be able to deliver service after service. And you have to know where their 2-10s are. When it's the Bean and Crystal, you have to know where those guys are all the time. And what's really hard about playing against them is you can get 2 of those areas right and 1 wrong, and they'll beat you 3-0 because you got the 1 area wrong. So it's a big task to go down there. We'll definitely have to be good tactically. I think we might have an area or 2 where we'll pose a problem for them, but it'll be an interesting game. You know, every time when they beat us 1-0 2 years ago, came off a corner kick in the 90th minute that deflected, and there wasn't a lot in the game from chances, but it was a very tactical battle. And then when we played them last year out in Portland in the playoffs, you know, we hit a crossbar, we hit a post, and then Jeff got in behind us off of a goal kick. And if you get caught chasing the game against them, it gets real hard to you. So they don't really have any weak spots. They can hurt you a lot of different ways. You just kind of have to pick your poison with them and take your chances when you get them.
Rory, a big thank you for coming on and doing this on short notice. Best of luck this weekend when you take on the North Carolina Courage, and best of luck to you and the Chicago Red Stars. I think it's going to be a tremendous final. Looking forward to watching it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's Rory Dames, Chicago Red Stars. They will be in action this Sunday. Wake Med Soccer Park, Cary, North Carolina. Chicago Red Stars knocking off Thorns FC in the final. This is a showcase final to take on the North Carolina Courage. Two great soccer minds, Rory Dames, Paul Riley, will be going at it tactically. Game not to be missed on ESPN. That interview with Rory Dames brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. We'll take a break.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
It is Dabinha! Oh! What a free kick from the Brazilian! It's magical!
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, and tonight we're going to wrap it up in big style here. We're going to talk some NWSL, but before we get to that, first, let me just remind you, the place to be in Edo is Kings Court. It's 903 Hutchins, shadows of BBVA Stadium. They got 13 monitors down there for all your soccer-watching desires. By the way, it's a place where a lot of the supporters groups go. So Houston Red Army, who's the Manchester United group, Chelsea, they're all down there, the Bayou City Blues. So if you want that kind of an atmosphere, you go there. They got a great rooftop deck, great food and cocktails and bar pricing, great, along with good British and Indian pub-style cuisine. So get down there, Kings Court, down in Edo on the east side of downtown Houston. Last weekend, had the privilege of calling the North Carolina Courage win over Rain FC. They go to the final. Three straight years they've won the Supporter Shield. Their coach joins us now. He's Paul Riley. Paul, thank you very much for coming on the program.
No problem. How you doing, Glenn? Good to hear from you.
Good. So I want to get right into culture down there because, you know, I'm down there talking to your players before this semifinal this past weekend, which you knocked off Rain FC to get to the final. You'll take on the Chicago Red Stars Sunday on ESPN. And it was just amazing how many of them, unsolicited, go right to the culture that you have created, and they go right to how you have helped improve them individually. So just take me into what the basis of the North Carolina Courage is and how you put together this mentality and this sort of this circle of culture.
Yeah, I think it really started 4 years ago. You know, we originated in Buffalo with the Western New York Flash, and then we were bought a year later and came to North Carolina and became the North Carolina Courage. But it started in that year. They finished eighth on the table. They brought a new coach in, which was myself, and I think the most important part was changing the environment of training. I feel and still feel to this day the training environment is the most important part. That's the part that the players live every day, and that's the part they know they can get better. Then that's a huge plus. You know, forget the housing, forget the medical, forget all the other stuff. If they can improve in the training environment, then they're willing to go for it. And I think the main thing for us was, you know, we got everyone immersed in the process and not the outcome of results. It wasn't about 3 points or championships or playoffs. It became just about getting better and improving. And, you know, you weren't fighting against another teammate for your position. You were fighting against yourself to be better. And so that was really the main change that we made. We made training fun again. And that's really where the culture grew from. You know, I think we challenged their limits every day and every year. And it's not easy to challenge limits because the team has improved a lot over the 4 years. We have 12 of us still remaining from that group that we originally started with. Was an important part of the culture is the main part for me. And performance over results was something that we emphasized the whole way. And I think it leads to resilience in a group and accountability in a group. And, you know, they're a motivated group. And I think the standards is an important part of it. And, you know, exemplifying the standards and believing in the standards and following the standards and measuring the standards. You know, sometimes we forget to measure standards. And I think it's a hugely important part of building the top team. And luckily, you know, our roadmap when we set out has gone pretty well to plan and probably better than anticipated, to be honest with you. We won it the first year of the championship when we got together, and we didn't deserve it. We weren't the top team in the league by a long shot, but we got it done in the end, and it was really through guts and a bit of fitness and a bit of character. And I think now they've evolved a lot as a group, and they're still a pretty young group. Most of them are 26, 27. I think we've added a little bit of tactical flexibility as we've got older, as the group's matured a little bit, and the roadmap's a little bit different this year than it has been other years because it's a World Cup year. There's definitely changes as we've gone along, But I think it all comes back to that same piece and that culture of being immersed in the process and not worrying about the results and making sure that those players can get better and every day they can get better. And it's about incremental improvement, you know, not just the big picture. It's the everyday picture. And I think that's an important part of what we do.
Talking to Paul Riley, the head coach of the North Carolina Courage. He'll take on the Chicago Red Stars and Sam Kerr this Sunday for the NWSL Championship. North Carolina Courage, 3 years in a row, Supporter Shield winners. And, you know, I'm looking on that sideline. I'm looking at you and Vlatko Andonovski, and I know you guys are great friends. You have great respect for each other. And I say to myself, wow, the body of work these two men have put together when it comes to coaching, and it started at the youth game. And I've followed your career. You know, you and I have stayed in touch. I've watched all the things you've done out on Long Island. You became a college coach. But the passion both of you and the passion you have for the game, Paul, is something that I think is on display for everybody to see.
I mean, I'll speak to probably for Vlatko too in this. I think that's the most important part is just loving the game and embracing the game. And you know, every day I get up and thank my lucky stars that I get to go to a stadium and coach people. And I think it's so much better than the regular job, and it's so much better than I could have anticipated where my life would go. You know, and I love coaching. I love affecting people's lives. I love being part of their lives. And I love seeing players develop. You know, I think that's the biggest thing for me, is seeing a player develop and go on to bigger and better things and, you know, make their national team or make the starting 11 or whatever it might be. That's something, you know, and that mission part of it is really, really important. And I know Vlatko and me talk a lot. We spoke this afternoon for about an hour, you know, about the national team and about our teams. And, you know, we just love the game. And I think it's 24/7. And, you know, when these players were young when we first took over, like Sam Lewis, Navi Dalcamper, and Lynn Williams, and Jaylene Hinkle, and they were all, you know, 21 and 22-year-olds, and, you know, they didn't realize, I think, how much you could love the game and how much you could give to the game. And I think the evolution of that group particularly has changed our environment and made me a better coach, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, I tell them all the time, you know, you got to be comfortable to get uncomfortable, because if you're uncomfortable, you can get better. You can't get better until you're uncomfortable. And something we talk about a lot, and now those players that have, you know, they don't mind being uncomfortable. It's something that, you know, they don't mind being vulnerable. They don't mind talking up in video. They don't mind being in a collaborative atmosphere. And I think Vlatko is the same way. You know, I think it's important. It's collaboration with the players and making sure everyone's on board and talking to the players and managing the players. I think they're all part of being a good coach and obviously, more importantly, of being a great team and trying to improve the team. And the most important part is always the players and always the team. And, you know, I tell my staff all the time, we're here to service the players. Bottom line, you know, 24/7, what do these players need to be successful? What is it they need off the field, on the field to be successful? And our job is to provide it. And if that means we have to do five jobs each, then that's what we do, you know. And I think that's kept us in good stead so far, for sure.
He's Paul Riley, North Carolina Courage coach. So the word on the street now is, amongst players, destination, let's get to the Courage, because number one, we're going to win things. Number two, I'm going to improve as a player. And number three, the eyes of the national team is on me because of the respect that the manager, Paul Riley, has. I've heard this a lot, Paul.
I don't know about that, to be honest with you, but I think the bottom line is it's always a training environment. We know that from when we played, you know. If you've got a good training environment, competitive environment, a challenging environment, then you can get better. But if you have an environment where it's toxic and it's difficult to improve and you're always fighting against your fellow teammates because, you know, the coach puts that, you know, on you, or you've got to be better than that other left back to make the team, make the lineup. And I think that's the wrong way to coach, you know. And we all have our viewpoints on how to coach and how to play. But, you know, I was an attacking player. I think our team's an attacking team. You know, as you saw yesterday, I think we had 34 shots to 6 yesterday. So we do get a little bit crazy around the penalty box and stuff. But we're a high-paced attacking team. And I think that's what we've been built on for these last few years. And it's just a great group. And, you know, I must have said it at least 4 times last week, then it's once in a lifetime type team. You don't really get a lot of these type of teams where I've coached 72 teams. Going, this is the 72nd team that I've coached since I finished playing, and from youth teams to college teams to men's teams to women's teams, and this is a once in a lifetime team. And that's not, you know, these players. When Sam Hughes, when you see the improvement, and you see her and Crystal Dunn, and you know, Lynn Williams and Abby Dalcamper and Jess McDonald, and even Jess McDonald and McCall Zaboni going to World Cup late, you know. It's great to see Zaboni get called up and get a cap, and Kristen Hamilton get caps, and Merritt Mathias get caps, and it's an amazing feeling. So, yeah, that's probably the most important part, the training environment. And and having some fun with them and making it something that they look forward to every day, and that's something they dread every day. And I'm sure there's professional players all over the world that dread going to work every day, but I love going to work, and I hope the players love going to work too.
He's Paul Riley, North Carolina Courage coach. Okay, so, you know, since we're doing this on a Monday night, I'm going to be the first to probably lead you into the obvious storyline of the week, and people are going to go, hey, look, Chicago Red Stars, three games with you this year. They beat you 3-1. They beat you 2-1. You drew 1-1 in Cary. What is it about them outside of Sam Kerr? And we do know they have just a wonderful striker in Sam Kerr, and she's had success against you. So what's the plan to shut her down?
Hey, listen, it's nothing wrong with being the underdog, Glenn, you know?
Oh, I knew you were going to say you. I knew you were going to pull the underdog card.
We haven't won a game against them all season, and they're a difficult proposition for us. Sam Kerr has great success against us, and we're going to spend a lot of time, obviously, this week talking about Sam Kerr. And the other side of it is, you know, we're going to get more shots than them. We usually do, and we get more opportunities. And we don't put ours away, we'll lose the game. There's no question. Sam Kerr is dangerous, and they're a good team, though. I don't think it's just a Sam Kerr show. I think they've got a lot of great points, and Julie Ayres is a rock back there for them, and they've got a great goalkeeper in Lissanier, and there's some other great pieces. You know, Nagasato is a very, very clever player underneath Sam Kerr. So it's a difficult proposition for us, and you know, we played them all three times very early in the season. We haven't played them with everybody here, and I think that's the exciting part for us, that we've finally got everybody packed, and both teams will be fully loaded and hopefully, you know, at full strength, because I think that's what makes the game what the game can be. And it's the two best teams this year for me, no question about it. And they haven't had much success, Chicago, getting to the playoffs, and they deserve to be there this year. And I'm really happy that they're there. It's nice to play a different team, and we're really excited about them. And it's great the fact that we haven't beaten them. There's no taking this game for granted. I think our team realizes that this is the hardest team to beat in the league, and we haven't beaten them. So as far as that's concerned, they're the better team. We're the underdog, and I think we're okay with that one. I think it's not just a tag for us. It's a mentality that we play with. We play with desperation. We play with that underdog mentality. And I think that Sunday's game is perfect for us. And yeah, we have to shut Sam Kerr down. We have to shut distribution to Sam Kerr down. But more than that, we have to play the way we play. And we're at home in front of our own crowd, which is unusual for a final. And so that's a big plus for us. And yeah, I think the players are really, really excited. We trained this morning after yesterday, and there's a great buzz in the group and some great juice in the group. And yeah, they're looking forward to it. And it's going to be a hell of a game. Some tremendous players on the field for sure on Sunday.
Paul Riley joining us here, Chicago Red Stars and North Carolina Courage on Sunday as we continue to promote what's going to be a great final. I can't wait to watch this game. Your box midfield, and there's a lot of talk around that. A lot of teams have matched that. The dual sixes of Mewis and Denise O'Sullivan, who was here in Houston, who just, I mean, you got to wonder how much ground she covers every game. And then you got these two relentless attacking players in Dabinia and Crystal Dunn. I know people are trying different things to slow this down, to win this middle third of the field, to be a platform to potentially beat you. But just kind of take us through the box a little bit and explain how this thing works.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. It's been hugely important for us the last 4 years. You know, it's really developed too. And I think I give a lot of credit to the players because it has evolved, and the evolution of the box and inside our formation has been massive for the group. And when you look at the two sixes and McCall to Boney, I would add to that group of sixes, Sam and Sullivan are the engine room of the team. And but the real crux of it is in the two tens. And, you know, yesterday, Dabina ran 17,000 meters yesterday, and Crystal Dunn was close to 16,000 meters. You know, I mean, these are incredible numbers for number 10.
It was unbelievable, honestly. I could not believe the amount of running and the work ethic, both with and without the ball, in possession and without it.
Yeah, there's no question. I think, you know, we've worked a lot this year on vertical rotation of the 6 and 10 and horizontal rotation of the 6s, horizontal rotation of the 10s. And the part that we've really developed this year, I think more so than any, is really the rotation of the 9s and 10s as well, you know, and the 10s drifting out and the 10s drifting in and high. And we've worked a lot of these type of rotations that we couldn't have done 4 years ago, to be honest with you, Glenn. But the maturity of the team has really helped. And I think tactically they've become much better and much more into what they're doing and much more thoughtful about what they're doing. And it's evolved a lot. And those half spaces, central spaces, wide spaces, we talk about them a lot. And we talk about, you know, players in them and how to create space, manipulate space. And you can see Crystal and Dabina all the time finding space. And you know, they're so clever. I mean, Dabina's improved dramatically. And they both play both sides of the ball. And both our forwards play both sides of the ball. And that's usually important because we press high. We're high-pressing team. And if you don't have that, and you don't have that work ethic in your group, then it's very difficult to do. And we get the ball up, we pick the ball up very high a lot of times, and it gives a little bit less distance to build. And but, you know, our build has improved too. You know, the centre-backs have got better on the ball. Our full-backs, spatial recognition has got better too. And the sixes are good. O'Sullivan is just amazing. I want to thank Houston from the bottom of my heart for giving us Sullivan, because she has been absolutely phenomenal since she got here. And she's made everybody better. And, you know, Crystal and Davina can't be those two without O'Sullivan and her work rate and what she does and how many times she reads the game and picks off balls and challenges for balls. And Sam Ewers is, you know, she's just Sam Ewers. She's different. She can run with the ball, which nobody else can do in this league. And, you know, she's one probably in the world that can run with the ball from the midfield area. And she adds such a huge piece to us. But we are very narrow, you know. We rely on our fullbacks, and our two fullbacks are two of the top six assisters in the league. That says a lot about the group. And they provide the wide element with our forwards. And the sixes provide the central and the half space element for us. And they're all really good at it. They just got better at it, and they keep getting better. And yeah, we're just going to keep working on it. It's still evolving, the formation. I still think we're a little bit of way where we really want to be as a group. But you just see improvements each year, and that's all you can ask. And see good growth in the group, and just going to keep plugging along and see if we can get better, you know.
Paul, outstanding interview. Thank you very much for spending time with us. Best of luck against the Chicago Red Star Sunday. You know I will be watching, and I certainly appreciate your time in a very, very busy week ahead of this final.
Thanks, Glenn, and you're still the best center-off I ever played with, buddy.
I'll send you the $100 in the mail. Well, actually, you won't need that. I don't think you need that anymore from me. I think back in the day we were playing, we might have needed that $100, but
yeah, $100. I love you, buddy.
It's all good. Love you too. Thanks, Paul, and best of luck on Sunday. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Glenn. All the best.
All right, that's Paul Riley, North Carolina Courage. Now, you know, he was one of the people that turned down being involved with the national team, as well as Laura Harvey. So we're all expecting Vlatko Andonovski is going to take the job. He has been interviewed. We do know that. All right, that's going to do it for tonight for Andrew Carlson, producer Victor Ariza, who is always so helpful on these shows. These two guys do a lot of great work for this program to help bring us some soccer programming here every week, and we don't do it without you, the fans listening in. Head over to the podcast, podcastarena.com, iTunes. A big thank you to our presenting sponsor, John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm. And that'll do it for tonight here on Soccer Matters. Until next Tuesday at 7, go Astros.